And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
What's good, everyone? Brought to you by our good friends over at Skip. It's time for another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice, Week 2 Mailbag Edition. Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen, and Anna Dua with you. What's going on, Pete?
What's up, Nick? Great to be with you. Skip, of course, the official food delivery app of the NHL. And Anna, the big news coming off yesterday is Josh Norris is back and looking better than ever, baby. I mean, this is what we've been looking for and hoping for almost a calendar year of this guy not playing and a two-goal game. You love to see it.
That was a surprise. I don't think anyone was expecting him to come back that quickly. The Senators kind of like sprung it on all of us, but good for them. Now we're finally seeing that Ottawa team that so many of us were excited about in the offseason, right, Nick?
Yep, and speaking of which, we're happy to bring in today's guest who's going to feed us a bit more on the Ottawa Senators and the fantasy scope in general. It's Matt Larkin from Daily Faceoff and the Puck Poolies podcast. What's going on, Matt?
It's good to be here, everybody. You know, the microphone setup is not ideal. I've got my daughter's headphones on. I'm improvising, you know, I'm riffing and I'm doing the best I can. And I'm excited to get into some fantasy talk.
Hey, they look great, my man. And the Ottawa Senators have been improvising early on in the season, going with like four players on their roster because they're trying to sign guys and stuff like that. But Josh Norris back in the mix, and I think that's a perfect way to start. What a feel-good story, eh?
It really is, especially because there was so much hand-wringing from DJ Smith during the preseason. Really, just a lot of murky comments about not sure if he's going to be mentally ready. We'll get him back when we can. And I was wondering when we were going to see Josh Norris at all, coming back from the multiple shoulder injuries. And even just before the season started, I dropped him in my rankings. And I said, I think I wrote in my rankings, you don't want this headache. You have no idea if he's going to be playing hockey again in October, November, December. So it was extra surprising to see him suddenly draw into the lineup and look so effective early on.
And this team is loaded, Matt. I mean, Jacob Chychrun's hot, Stutzla's hot, Tarasenko, off-season mover, is red hot. I mean, they're all ridiculous. Now even Batherson's getting going because he's playing, it looks like, on even strength and on the power play with Josh Norris, who has 40-goal capability, bar none, if he stays healthy for, say, 70 games this season. So I'm excited about the Senators from a future standpoint. Wanted to hear where you think they stack up with some other teams that were on the outside of looking in last year. Buffalo bounced back on Tuesday. Detroit looks awesome so far through a couple games.
Yeah, okay. So if you connect the dots with me, here's how I view it shaking out. Okay, so to me, Buffalo is going to be this year's New Jersey. So the team's going to break through, suddenly become dominant. I think that Ottawa is going to be this year's Buffalo. So the team that comes really close, knocks on the door, maybe misses the playoffs by a single point. I think Detroit is going to be this year's Ottawa, who improves in the standings, gets to that playoff periphery, but doesn't necessarily break through. There are only so many spots to go around in the East, of course, right? But I am excited about the Ottawa Senators, particularly more so than the Red Wings. They just have a lot of high-end talent, especially once you have Shane Pinto drawing back into that lineup. And I'm just so pumped up about Jake Sanderson right now. He looks like he's going to justify that contract after, what, five games? He's dominant. He's already on power play one. He looks like an absolute horse. So it's going to be a fun season to watch the Ottawa Senators.
Matt, I love those comparisons, but I'm not going to lie. I feel like so far this year, the New Jersey Devils are once again this year's New Jersey Devils with the way they've started their season. But sticking with the Senators, I got a question for you, a player that Pete didn't mention, Matthew Joseph. So I thought this was the guy who was heading out of Ottawa to make room for Shane Pinto. Points in three of his first four games, 4 points in that span. I mean, he's really proving his worth to the Senators team. Is he maybe worth a pickup on the waiver wire or something while he's this hot?
I think he is, especially in a deep league. And if you sort of trace the history of Matthew Joseph, he's part of that Tampa Bay Lightning system that seemed to churn out marginal prospects and turn them into pretty good NHLers. And we know after that trade, the Nick Paul trade, he came in really hot to finish that season, 2021-22. And it seems like he's recaptured that mojo. And I described Ottawa, I'm going to quote my old pal Scott Pianowski from Yahoo, when he describes a fantasy carnival situation. And I think the Ottawa Senators, you just want as many pieces of that team as you can get because they're not that good defensively even yet. And that's exciting because I think they're going to be playing in a lot of track meet games. So even if you're going down to the top nine in the forward group, Ridly Greig as well is a pickup that I recommended early in the season. I like every piece of the Senators right now.
I want to go around the board, and Pete, we can start with you. Is Josh Norris a must-own fantasy foul? Because I took a peek last night after he scored his second goal. He was at 38%. Now I believe he's around 47%. So people are acting up and figuring this out. But his last 75 games in the NHL, 39 goals and 60 points, of course, limited to just 8 games last year due to a shoulder issue. So is he a must-own foul, Pete?
He's close to it. If he didn't have the recent injury history, I'd call him that. More times than not, like, you know, 3/4 of the time, I would say add him over the worst guy on your roster. And Anna, let me know if you agree, but one fan was asking the fan question delivered, of course, by Skip. Robert Thomas, if you want to go Matchbox 20 and call him Rob Thomas, go right ahead. Or Josh Norris. I'll go Josh Norris over him, but I won't go Josh Norris over another fan question. Norris or Brock Besser, what do you think?
That's tough. I feel like there's a lot of hype around Brock Besser as of late, and rightfully so. He's had a hot start to this year, but this is a guy who I'm expecting him to hit his ceiling for the first time this season, right? I haven't seen too much out of Brock Besser in the past that would make me like so excited. He's a super consistent player. I have to have him in my fantasy lineup. I know Davey Satriano, friend of the podcast, woke up at like 3 a.m. to add him to his roster after his 4-goal game, which honestly, that's a little bit extreme in my eyes.
Well, that's a true story.
That's a true story. This is not even a fake story. He woke up.
For Brock Besser?
For Brock Besser.
It's literally Matchbox 20. It's 3 a.m. Let's pick up Josh Norris or
Insanity.
Brock Besser.
Insanity. Don't do that.
But I'm going Josh Norris, even in that situation, Pete. I just like the Ottawa Senators more. Matt touched on it, and he can add on it with his thoughts. But that team has so much depth in their top six, maybe even on their third line. And Josh Norris on that top power play, getting the opportunity to play with the wingers they have on that roster. I mean, it's a no-brainer in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm with you, Anna. Especially if you are comparing Josh Norrison to other injury-prone players, like, let's say, Brock Besser, then that's an easy way to break the tie. It's not like you have to worry about the injury risk of Josh Norris when you're comparing him to another injury-prone player in Brock Besser, who, by the way, still does not have a 30-goal season to his name, which, for the brand name that he is pretty surprising because he can't get through a full season. So based on that injury history, you got to go Josh Norris because you're pricing in the injury risk there. And then with Robert Thomas, I think you got to go, if it's a points league, the points only, Thomas is a safer pick because he's probably going to get 65, 70 points. But if the league has literally any other categories, you got to go Norris because Thomas is a liability in any format that counts shots, hits, any banger categories. He's a pretty much a one or two category player.
And one other Norris-centric question, comparing him to Patrick Kane. Someone was asking, should I continue to stash Patrick Kane, who's injured? And remember, he has that UFA status, so that overrides his injury status on Yahoo. So you can't stash him on IR+. Plus, you can only stash him on the bench, Matt. Would you rather Patrick Kane or Josh Norris? And I'll tie in, where do you think Patrick Kane is going to land when it's all said and done?
Yeah, to me, this is a pretty easy decision. You don't want Patrick Kane in this scenario when you're comparing him to Josh Norris, who can help you right now. Patrick Kane is still weeks away from actually signing with a team. That doesn't necessarily mean he's instantly drawing it in that team's lineup either, despite the fact he's working out. I still don't think we see Patrick Kane on the ice until at minimum the beginning of December, could even be the start of January by the time he's fully up to speed coming back from that hip surgery. So I just think you can't wait for him, especially when there's a quality option like Josh Norris available, who's going to be in your lineup contributing for the next couple months.
I love how Patrick Kane's skating at Oakville Ice Sports, by the way. It's a nice tie-in for Anna and Matt here. But nevertheless, Matt, I had to look at my calendar and wonder what year it was. I see Kirby Dach's hurt. Gabe Vilardi's hurt. Zach Werenski was banged up. Sounds like he's closer. Freddie Anderson's banged up. Like, what year is it? Is it 2019 or is it 2023?
Oh my goodness. It's pretty sad, especially when you look at someone like Kirby Dach. Those types of injuries are deflating when it's a player. And, and Gabe Vilardi too. A first round talent that had good pedigree, that gets a change of scenery, that gets a chance to spread his wings and blossom, and gets hurt right when he's starting to be handed a significant role. And it happens, especially Kirby Dach. That's someone who's had a cursed career so far. Going back to the broken thumb, I think it was, right, at the World Juniors. He just can't seem to get that long stretch of runway for his development. And he finally got a little bit of it last year, and we saw massive improvement in his game. So I really do feel for Kirby Dach and Gabe Vilardi too, because he was getting quite a nice opportunity on the top line too in Winnipeg.
I just want to piggyback off that and go through some injury replacement options and guys like that in terms of internal deployment following these injuries. So Vilardi's out 4 to 6 weeks, as we know, but they're going Connor Scheifele-Appleton, Perfetti, Namestnikov, Ehlers there, Kirby Doc. And I think this could set the table, weirdly enough, for Alex Newhook. Like, you hate to see your teammates and players get banged up, but Alex Newhook, I think, could benefit from this Kirby Doc injury.
He's fit in pretty well with Montreal, too. I was just about to ask Matt. I've been higher than anyone else, I think, on the Montreal Canadiens, just from a fantasy perspective this season. Even if they're not going to do well in reality, there's a couple of pieces that have really intrigued me. Alex Newhook being one of them for sure, and I think this gives him an opportunity to step it up. Another one is Slafkovský, right? Everyone was super excited about him last season. I was really excited with the start he had this year. He looked really good, and now Kirby Doc's hurt, and I'm wondering how this is going to impact him, how it's going to impact the depth of the Canadians. Even RHP, he's playing on the top line now with Nick Suzuki. Is there anyone that you think maybe is flying a little bit under the radar, Matt, on this team that you might consider picking up in the absence of Kirby Doc, or are you all done with the Montreal Canadiens for now?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't think I'm done with the Habs. I think, especially in a deep league, there's always a chance for a discount when players are on bad teams. It's a matter of, do you have plus minus as a category? Are you willing to stomach the hit you're going to get? And if plus minus isn't a category, then I think absolutely there are plenty of Habs that can help you. Obviously, in the top end, Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki. But in terms of the ripple effect of the Dak injury, Newhook, very similar situation, reclamation project, just like Dak was last year. I think moving him to center too, he gets a chance to impact the play in more ways. So not just goal opportunities, maybe more assist opportunities. But the Hab that I think is the most underrated in fantasy is Mike Matheson. And it's weird because he was sort of considered this overpaid bust of a player, bad analytics for a significant portion of his career. Then he really turned things around when he goes from Pittsburgh and then Montreal last year. Actually played a huge role. He's still playing like 25 minutes a night, getting top power play work. And I feel like the fantasy community has taken a long time to come around to the idea of him as an offensive player, but he's pretty useful right now.
Guys, speaking of useful, it's been a weird, weird start for some teams. I'm watching the Washington Capitals. I'm like, is this the LA Kings or Chicago Blackhawks where it's like, this is pending doom and gloom, you're finished. But oh yeah, we have that whole Ovechkin problem where we got to wait a couple years here. But 1-2, they got shellacked by the Ottawa Senators on Wednesday night. And Pete, the craziest thing for me, you know I love my shot props. Alex Ovechkin, bagels. The old Tage Thompson in the last two games, shots on goal. What's going on, Pete? Fill me in.
Yeah, I can't remember a time where you see bagels for Ovi in the shots department. He's the best in the entire league over the course of his entire career. And even if you look at the past like 5 years or so. But yeah, with Washington, like, they got blown out twice. The other game against Calgary, they got heavily outshot. This team just doesn't have it. They're not making the playoffs this year. Those days are over. This is all about the Ovechkin goal chase. And to be honest, I'm not loving what I see, Matt, from that standpoint either, because nobody's even generating any shots on goal on the entire team. The other day, Anna and I checked, like, through two games, their leader in shots was five. I mean, that's pretty tough.
Yeah, it's very concerning. This was one of the oldest teams in the league. I think last year they might have been the oldest team. They were right up there. So we know that the Capitals have peaked. Obviously, they're out of the playoffs. They're in decline as a big veteran group. But it was always supposed to be the saving grace was, hey, at least the franchise can really put all the eggs in the basket of the Ovechkin goal chase. And seeing him just, 73 goals away from breaking the record at the start of the season, that was really exciting. You could envision him getting there by next year. But when a player suddenly starts to age, we can't underestimate how quick that decline can be. It seems like 73 goals is an easily attainable feat for someone who had more than 40 last year. But what if he gets 28 goals this year? Then all of a sudden, we're looking at a 2-3 year timeline to catch Gretzky. And the sort of decline, the curve could really just be steep. If what we're seeing right now is the aging of Alex Ovechkin, I don't want to believe it yet because he's been so invincible, but it has to happen scientifically at some point.
You would think. I'm not ready to call it just yet. I know Anna called it last week on the Tampa Bay Lightning, and she could be on to something. They can't make a save, and they got to play differently in front of their goalies. But nevertheless, I can't call it just yet, Anna, on Alex Ovechkin. I think he's going to have one of these furious games where he breaks out, where he gets like 17 shots on goal, McKinnon style.
He's a great player in his own right. The environment around him is just abysmal. Like, this is the time where you have to blame the guys he's playing with, because the Washington Capitals, my goodness, I didn't have them making the postseason this year, guys. They weren't even one of the teams that I thought were going to be right in the mix. But right now, they're looking like a draft lottery team. the way they're playing. Like, truly, this is going to be a brutal season for this squad if they can't get anything going. Like, Backstrom looks old. Oshie looks old. Kuznetsov got barely something going. And if we're talking about Kuznetsov on this Washington Capitals team as a bright spot, you know that there's a little bit of concern there. We had a fan question that actually came in, and someone said they got Thompson for Ovi and Rust.
Yeah, that's excellent. To me, Tage Thompson, I know the start has been slow, but I think he's proven himself with two really strong seasons in a row. And I think he was a borderline first round pick going into this year, maybe top 12, give or take, depending on where you had him in your rankings. I had Ovechkin around the 25 spot, and obviously he's a declining asset. Brian Rust, good depth piece, someone who can get you 20 plus goals. But I think that's a great example of getting the better player in the trade. Just Thompson's right in the middle of his prime. Ovechkin, you know, 42 goals, I think it was last year, but that's an optimistic projection based on how he looks so far this year. So yes, I love that trade.
Delivered by our friends over at Skip. This is a prevailing question, I think, in fantasy hockey the last 10 years. Pyotr Kochetkov's back from the American Hockey League. He's not even playing for Carolina's farm team because they don't have one. He's playing for Tampa's. Nevertheless, Matt, what do you do? Like, this is a big question because Freddie Anderson took a puck in the mask, but he did practice. Now they have three goalies on the roster. I understand they're out west, but how would you tackle Kochetkov right now?
Well, he's been someone, and I know you've been on this train as well, Nick. We both have. He's been my boy. I've been trying to just get people to pick him up, and yes. I keep thinking, this is it. It's Kochetkov season. And then I was so shocked when the Hurricanes brought back Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta. I thought maybe they'd bring back one of them, but of course, with him being waivers exempt, he's blocked. He has to go to that weird purgatory of no AHL team, has to find his own AHL team. What a mess. But the thing is, we know he was signed long-term. We know that the Hurricanes were basically speculating on the consistent injury problems with Anderson and Raanta. There's going to be more of those popping up this year. So it was only a matter of time before he got his chance. I think he is the long-term answer in net. And I think it's important to remember that the Canes, they only brought back Raanta for 1 year. So I really do think by next year, they're going to be rolling with, at worst, a Kochetkov-Anderson tandem. And maybe the 1A, 1B flips there. So in a keeper league, I'm still very high. This year, it's going to be, you're going to have to just ride the wave. He's going to get called up. He's going to get sent down. When he's up, you want him. If you have the room on your roster, on your bench to stream him, great. But it is going to be a roller coaster.
It's funny, right? They changed their slogan from take warning to cause chaos. And then they brought back the goalie trio.
Chaos.
That's total chaos. What are they doing out there, man? They're going for the Stanley Cup or bust, right? I feel like they're overcomplicating things. But yeah, Anna, Nick actually asked me, I don't know if he asked you, but I'll ask you right now. In a keeper league, Spencer Knight or Pyotr Kochetkov? To me, that's an easy one. I'll go with Kochetkov there.
Nick didn't ask me because he knows my answer. I don't think there's a person exactly on this planet who loves Pyotr Kochetkov more than me. Guys, he reminds me of a young Marc-Andre Fleury. That's who he reminds me of. And I think when he finally gets the opportunity to get some games in the NHL on a consistent basis, we're going to see that type of goaltending the way Fleury looked in his prime. And I'm really excited about that. I haven't seen a goalie like that in some time. Pyotr Kochetkov in a keeper league, no-brainer.
I figured you'd answer that way. And I guess my only reservation with that is, like, you guys know how I tackle young goalies. I never go after them. Devon Levi, no thank you this year, but next year I'll be all over you. And I just feel like Spencer Knight, while he's stewing away in the American Hockey League, at some point in time, he's going to be called up to the NHL. He's going to rip it up. And it concerns me he's no longer on my roster, Matt.
Yeah, we know that the upside is significant, right? He was one of the highest drafted goalies in the last decade plus, right? And the pedigree is still great. And especially now that we understand what was going on with him is more mental, it, to me, makes it more clear that it wasn't a physical or necessarily a hockey problem that was holding him back. And that is a positive thing in terms of just fantasy value, understanding what his ceiling still is. It means if he can get his demons sort of settled, then I think he still has the ability to become that elite goaltender down the road. It's just a matter of when is it going to be? Because Sergei Bobrovsky, obviously he bought back a little bit of goodwill with that run to the Stanley Cup final last year. I think his runway has got longer. Anthony Stolarz, quality backup as well. So it's just, it's crowded in that crease now. That's why I know it's the same case with Carolina, but it's different when it's two guys that are consistently injury prone. I just think it's easier for Kochetkov to find his way back in the net, which he literally has done just now, right? So I'm still higher on him. But Knight is someone, again, if you're in a really deep league and you have room to stash a goalie, of course, the upside with him is still tremendous.
nice bounce back win the other day for the Panthers against the New Jersey Devils. That was a statement win that they're not going away just yet. I like what I've seen from Evan Rodriguez, by the way. Mm-hmm. He's like top 15 overall at the start of the season through about a week in standard category leagues. Matt, so what are your thoughts on this player? High shot volume for a couple years running with three different teams now. They actually signed him to a four-year deal, too. I forgot about that. So I like that value contract with E-Rod.
I agree. I'm just going to give myself a little Barry Horowitz, a little pat on the back, if I can reach my back. Because I was high on Evan Rodriguez all throughout the offseason. To me, I described him as a high-output player joining a high-output team. Right, we know the Panthers are big play drivers. They generate a lot of chances as well. So I just thought stylistically, he was a really great fit. Based on the amount of money they paid him, you know he's going to be playing mostly in the top six, getting a significant opportunity, playing with Barkov, of course. So, of course, he's not going to be a 90-point player, but I'm not surprised to see him flourishing so far. I did predict him to have a career year. So I'm a believer, and I think he's going to continue to have a strong season.
I was pretty surprised when Pete told me how high he ranked in fantasy. I just like wasn't expecting that. But this season, more than ever, Matt, I feel like the guys who are ranking well in fantasy are so shocking to me. I think my biggest surprise, not really, I was very high on this player, but didn't expect him to have as hot of a start as he did, was Brady Shea for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Contract
year. I mean, he's, contract year for sure. But he had a phenomenal year last year, too, that kind of gets swept underneath the rug as well. And he's just come out having a hot start. He's the most valuable defenseman on the Hurricanes roster right now, and I don't think anyone had that going into this season. So who's been your biggest surprise so far in fantasy after week one?
Yeah, it's crazy. Brady Shea, I thought especially I was sort of bearish on him because they bring in Orlov, they bring in Tony D'Angelo. It was just so crowded for minutes for looks on that decor. In terms of who has really surprised me, I mean, I could say someone like Frank Vetrano, who's obviously got the hat trick, but to me it's not sustainable. I think Jake Sanderson is sort of the headliner for me. It's not a surprise because I've been so high on him, but the fact that he just seems to be fully arriving this quickly. Like, I thought maybe he could overtake for the power play one spot eventually, but he's already done it after a week. So to me, it just feels like Jake Sanderson is suddenly going to be a top tier, like 60-point defenseman this season. Almost like he's going to have the Evan Bouchard breakout. So I call that a minor surprise just in terms of how quickly he seems to be accelerating his development.
I like it. And some other potential sleepers off to hot starts. Trevor Moore, 3 goals in 3 games. Teuvo Teravainen, contract year, 4-game point streak. Ditto for Brady Shea. And Evan Rodriguez has 5 points in his first 3 games. So I'm serving up a 12-game buffet on Thursday. You're all invited. You can all bring dates. Matt, can I interest you in a Leo Carlson NHL debut, projected to be on the top line with Zegras and Terry, of course, second overall in 2023, and Dallas is in town for that one.
I love it, and I've said this to people consistently all throughout the offseason, just even when I was ranking, and I seem to be over-projecting guys like Carlson, Fantilli, but I really mean it when I say the 2023, I signed a French-Canadian there. My grandma's French-Canadian, 2023.
I like it.
But the draft class is so special that I think people forget that there are multiple players in that top three, top five that might have been the first overall pick in several previous drafts. I think that's true of Adam Fantilli, and you can make a case it's true of Leo Carlson as well. Very special player. It doesn't mean he's going to be instantly dominant, but it does mean he could instantly be one of the top 100 players in the league. We don't know. It's possible he'll be a Calder Trophy contender right off the hop, and I like the fact that he's being put with Zegras to start. It takes a little bit of pressure off him. So it's going to be very interesting to see.
So you talked about the Calder Trophy, the guy who won it last year. We got a fan question on him, Matty Beniers. How patient are we supposed to be with Matty Beniers? I also saw a similar one regarding Vince Dunn. The Kraken are one of two teams. The other one is the San Jose Sharks without a win. They're 0-3-1. This is a little concerning, right, considering they don't have a superstar to anchor this roster, Matt. You agree?
I think it is, and I think you've nailed it, Pete. It's the superstar problem. This is a team that relied on a very nice shooting percentage last year, especially Jared McCann. He was sort of emblematic of the entire season. And there's a trickle-down effect because this is not a team of elite offensive talent. You're not finishing as much, and for a guy like Vince Dunn, for example, well, you're not going to be getting as many assists if the forwards aren't finishing those chances as often. It is a deep team, so I think in real life, they're still probably going to be okay. But in fantasy, the arrow might be pointing downward. And for Matty Beniers, I've said this before, Matty Beniers is a great real-life player. I think he's going to be consistently overrated in fantasy. He does so many things well, But it's not like Matty Beniers to me is going to be a 90 or 100-point player. I think he's going to top out maybe in the mid-70s, maybe low 80s. But I think he's going to have sort of a Nico Hischier type of career development where he just does so many things well, he doesn't have to score to be effective. Great real-life player, but I think if you're counting on him to be an anchor for your fantasy team, you're going to be disappointed.
I don't know. I'm kind of down on the Seattle Kraken this year. I was heading into the season. I just think there's so much more competition in the Western Conference. So since we're talking about young players, there's one player I want to get your take on, Matt. Logan Cooley. I've been so high on the Arizona Coyotes. I like their start so far. Not the best showing against the New York Islanders, but they've impressed me as a team. I think there's a lot of fantasy value with young guys in this team, specifically in keeper leagues. Where would you pick up Logan Cooley in a regular league as well as a keeper league? Like, how high would you rank him?
I'm very high on Logan Cooley. I was very pleased to snag him in my keeper league draft this year. To me, so in a keeper league, I think you should value him very highly, especially among rookies. Obviously, he's not Connor Bedard, but I think you could make a case he was the number two forward prospect in the league going into the start of the season. I think he's got tremendous potential. He's so dynamic with the puck on his stick. I think he's going to be a top-tier scorer in the league. I could see him eventually growing into a 90-point player, someone who threatens, I don't know for scoring titles, but I'd say perennial all-star is probably going to be the floor with him. I think he's that talented, so I'm a big fan. In terms of redraft leagues, I think he could be a top 100 player this season. I think he's going to do it. I think as a rookie, 50 points, 60 points, maybe even 60 the way he looks so far, I don't think are out of the question. So I'm a big fan. I'm sort of a Logan Cooley stan, if you will.
And Matt, one last one for me. Connor Brown, everybody was anticipating he was going to play a lot with Connor McDavid. We haven't seen it a ton in the preseason or early on in the regular season, but nice little response from Edmonton the other day with a blowout win. Do you see this materializing? Are you being patient if you drafted Connor Brown as a sleeper? And the fan question delivered by Skip calls his line mate McJesus, of course.
So to me, the Connor Brown situation, it's kind of a classic teaching moment for fantasy. And I always say this during the season, during the preseason rather, is don't put all of your faith in line combinations. Bet on talent because line combinations change throughout the year. And Connor Brown's a good player. He does so many things well. He's a threat shorthanded. Yes, he had the chemistry with Connor McDavid going back to junior, just like Jonathan Durant going to Colorado with Nathan MacKinnon. But you have to look at the talent of that lineup. And there are so many permutations that work. And there are just a lot of wingers that are, sorry, but better hockey players than Connor Brown. Connor Brown's a good player. He's not a great player. And if you're just sort of tying all his fantasy value into his deployment with McDavid, that's dangerous. And it probably caused you to reach on him in a draft. So I think it's possible that he gets brought back, put with McDavid again at some point, but maybe that doesn't last either. Maybe it's for a week. Maybe it's for 14 games, 10 games, whatever it is. So I just think you have to be careful. And that's a classic example of just, I prefer to bet on talent over line combinations because talent doesn't really change. Line combinations do.
Matt, excellent stuff. We got a lot of fantasy football players in this chat right now. People who love survivor pools. You got one coming to Daily Faceoff here, and Puck Pooley's been doing some great things as well.
Thanks, everybody. Always a pleasure. And hopefully next time I've got a better microphone set up for you.
The one and only Matt Larkin from Daily Faceoff and the Puck Pooley's podcast as we tie a bow on this puppy, Pete. A lot of games coming up on Thursday, but the Anaheim Ducks, again, a team we're looking at.
Absolutely. They have a bunch of different ways to turn. Matt mentioned Vetrano. There's all the young kids, Leo Carlson, if you want to dabble in that. I like Jamie Drysdale. Davey Satriano has been talking to me all summer about this kid, Pavel Minchukov, and he scored a goal the other day. Apparently, he's getting some looks on Power Play One right now, and the question was delivered by our friends at Skip, and this guy was saying, you should post about Minchukov. He just past Drysdale and Fowler to be the Power Play One quarterback, guys. Your thoughts?
Excellent pronunciation. I like that quite a bit. But you know, I watch a lot of Ducks hockey. I'll buy in. I want to see Greg Cronin do well there. I want to see that team do well. So I'm buying Frankie Vetrano with the hat trick as well.
I'm not high on the Ducks. I've been saying this for a while. This team just has an uphill battle in every single game they play. But while they're hot, if you want to pick up some of these players on the waiver wire and they're going to be available on the waiver wire, you know, why not? Some positivity for Anaheim.
Positivity is all we need in this day and age. So that's good on the Anaheim Ducks. We'll see how they fare in Leo Carlson's NHL debut here. It's time for Good, Better, Best, brought to you by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Who do you have, Anna?
I got to go with Aiden Hill to kick it off, Nick. Right now, he's tied for the most wins in the NHL so far among all goalies. You know, he's proving himself. Everyone was down on Aiden Hill. They thought his Stanley Cup was a fluke, and now he's making everyone be a little bit quiet right now with his performance to kick off the year.
I'll go better. I'll say the guy that has stepped up under the radar offseason signing, James Van Riemsdyk, for the Boston Bruins, who are 2-0, one of four remaining unbeaten teams in the NHL, with everything they lost, not only Bergeron and Krejci, but also Bertuzzi and Taylor Hall. This is a breath of fresh air to see JVR Nick score two power play goals in two games so far.
I'm going full Tina Turner mode. Simply the best. The cat is back. He's in Michigan. Alex DeBrincat, four games, 8 points, 13 shots on goal. Alex DeBrincat, you are the best. Brought to you by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Good, better, best. I love that new segment, Pete.
That was all producer Bob Bender. But yeah, he actually is the best, DeBrincat. He's leading the NHL in points right now. Okay. And actually, remember that offseason debate we had him against Tarasenko? Tarasenko's only two behind at 8-6. So maybe this will be a debate we'll be having all year for the goal scoring title or the, you know, point scoring title, something like that. It's crazy.
I like it. Just want to tie up some loose ends before we wrap. Sebastian Aho was banged up the other day, upper body injury, didn't play on Tuesday. They're going with Teuvo Teravainen up the middle right now with the Canes, Bunting, Teravainen, Natchez on the top line. Pavel Buchnevich, has been banged upper body injury. Saw Thomas Kyrou, Torpachenko, Shen Kapanen, Verona Hayes, Blaze. So they have the depth there. And the last thing I wanted to bring up, and Anna, I'll ask you, is it time to cut ties with my boy Blake Wheeler? Just looks out of sorts with the New York Rangers.
It might be. It's so early that I hate saying that and giving up on someone like that, because Blake Wheeler was a player that Pete and I were watching really closely. He's had such a high ceiling in the past, and it hasn't been that long since the guy was like a 90-point player, and all of a sudden, it's just not working with the Rangers. This Ranger team is just so up and down in my eyes this season. Guys, like, I don't know how it's going to pan out for them. When you have, like, Lafreniere scoring the first goal of the year and getting everyone all riled up, and then they look slow at other times, it's just tough. Like, is their window, like, slowly coming to a close? Absolutely. Like, how long can Shesterkin be the only reason this team is a contender year after year?
Well, they're playing a little different style under coach Peter Laviolette. Maybe that'll translate better to the postseason than what Gallant did last year, but that remains to be seen. Couple other notes I wanted to mention. Sam Bennett sounds like he's not playing Thursday. He hasn't played yet this season, but he's coming back in the near future. So make sure you get him in bangers leagues. He plays with Matthew Tkachuk almost every night. And then wanted to ask you, Nick, who do you see getting the bump with Victor Arvidsson on long-term IR with back surgery? Sounds like a tough situation. And I know the LA Kings, you mentioned Trevor Moore, but there's also Quentin Byfield on the top line. And this new kid, Alex Laferriere, who seems like he brings a little sandpaper. He's a tough guy.
Yeah, I still love that tweet where it was Lafreniere over Laferriere in Los Angeles. But yeah, like I think it's going to be one of those things where they try a variety of different looks. And I tell you, like, if Trevor Moore continues to contribute the way he has, then I think they might as well go with him, because Los Angeles is such a peculiar story. We didn't even talk about revenge. P.L. Dubois, now going by P.L. Dubois in L.A., by the way, scores in his return. Vilardi gets banged up like 3 minutes in. But yeah, like, L.A. is a team, man, that's got to take that next step here. Like, I want to see something from them. Goaltending-wise, hasn't been great to start the year. It's been a slow start, but they get their first win here.
And they've been competitive in the postseason as of late, right? It's not been blowouts for the LA Kings. They barely made it out. And I know that they want to do better, go further. Once again, it's tough. The Western Conference is so much tougher this year than it was last year. So I don't really know how the Kings are going to fall into that. I like that you focused on Trevor Moore, though, because it's not just this season, guys. Last year, when Trevor Moore gets hot, he gets hot. This guy can put up shots night after night. And he was one of my favorite depth pickups last season. And I'm excited to see that he's continuing it this year.
Couple things to wrap. Shout out to two of my former line mates playing hockey, big time listeners of this podcast. So Jay Zemanovich and Adrian Conley, shout out to you guys. And Brian Boyle, shout out to the Chirp and Darren Millard and the excellent producer Bob Bender there. Brian Boyle on the Chirp. And talk some Peter Laviolette. Love revenge matchups too. And that's coming up on Thursday as well, Anna.
I'm excited to listen to that. I'm going to listen just for producer Bob Bender, though, not Laviolette.
I want to make Bob smile. With that in mind, we're going to wrap. We're back on Monday for a week three look at the waiver wire. Time is flying here in this fantasy season. So many thanks to Matt Larkin of Daily Faceoff and Puck Poolies, producer Bob Bender as well. For Pete Jensen and Anna Dua, I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, delivered by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.